good evening and welcome in to a little bit of Chiefs talk to get you through the last little bit of your night right here on Sports Radio 810. That's right, it's all Chiefs for the next hour or so. I'm Josh Briscoe here with you for that entire time. I haven't gotten to talk about anything that happened from the Chiefs yet today. We obviously had the post-game show immediately following the game here on 810. But we have everything from that eventful evening against the Green Bay Packers, and then now we have a much less eventful day to look back on with the Chiefs and their relationship with the trade deadline. It was a relatively loveless relationship, but it did come and go, and so we will talk about that on this evening's show as well. If you missed any of the post-game show and you want to catch what we had to say in real time following Chiefs versus Packers, you can check out the post-game show in the podcast form in the 810 mobile app or at 810whb.com. It's me and Brad Porter on the post-game show, and we had a lot to talk about immediately following that game. The thing that ended up leaving me the most frustrated, though, from the game against the Packers was less the individual things that frustrated me and more the response to those frustrating things. It's a little bit vague, perhaps, because it covers actually quite a bit of ground. And it covers what happens in the coaching of this game. That's, for me, going to be the biggest storyline. There are definitely there are personnel shortcomings on this team, especially whenever it's as absolutely mauled by injuries as it was on Sunday night. But I think the story of this game is coaching. And it's on both sides of the ball, and it's also on both sides of the coin, if you will. It's hard to evaluate this type of thing. I'm pretty confident in where I'm coming from here, but I don't come to all these conclusions easily in many cases. And I don't think that it's something that you can very easily write off the mistakes or credit the successes or do anything swiftly or with a broad brush. I know that in many ways, me sitting here begging for nuance is almost a cliche at this point. Like, I'm very aware of the fact that's typically one of my moves. It's like, hey, but in this issue, and it's been this way for forever, since before I was at 810, since before I was talking about sports, I'm usually this way throughout issues altogether. So again, I know that it's a little bit obvious, perhaps, that I will beg you to look at multiple angles on what happened on Sunday night, specifically in starting with Andy Reid. But man, cliche or not, I think it's so incredibly important that we do the amount of labor to find the actual truth of the matter. Because I think if you fail to do that, you at least walk away with some ill-conceived notions about the head coach of this football team. And at worst, you, if you were in a place of power like Clark Hunt, and I don't think that we're in danger of him doing this wrong right now, but if you were in his shoes, the worst case scenario is that you make decisions that derail the direction of your franchise. And so I think it's really, really important that everyone from Clark Hunt down to you and me have a logical and full-pictured version of the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, the defensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs, the GM of the Kansas City Chiefs, because everyone, and never was it on display more than it was on Sunday night, everyone has so many different angles with which you must evaluate them. It's not even both sides of a coin. It's like each side of a 20-sided die, of a die you would use for Dungeons and Dragons. You're going to roll that thing 20 times, and every single time you're going to have a different way that you should be evaluating these guys in these positions of power. We'll talk about all of this, and then also the NFL trade deadline, by the way, coming and going, like I said earlier, with Seth Kizer of The Athletic coming up here in just a little bit. Next segment, we will chat with Seth. But right now, it's just me. And so here's where I'm at. Andy Reid took a tremendously injured team with Matt Moore at quarterback. A team that all week long, all the way into the pregame show that Brad and I did, that led you right up to kickoff, all week long, that whole window, the expectations for this team and their ability to hang with the Packers were unbelievably low. He comes through with an absolutely outstanding offensive game plan. Matt Moore comes through in some big moments. There are mistakes made from LeSean McCoy, puts the ball on the ground, otherwise was having a nice game. There are multiple angles on that one. Travis Kelce has a couple of hard catches he could have made, but is extremely good and extremely important to this offense. You have an offensive line that is also obviously crushed by injuries. They hold up at a lot of different points and fail at others. It's complicated. But Andy Reid schemes up this offense that really just works excellently throughout the course of the game. And there are stumbling blocks, of course, because, again, you are playing with Matt Moore. And Andy Reid's not a perfect offensive play caller and whatnot. But things are moving pretty well, except for LeSean McCoy's fumble being a real backbreaker. And then at the end of the game, in a game that was way closer than anyone imagined it would be, in a game that was still winnable in a way that I certainly did not really expect it to be that late in the game, Andy Reid punts on 4th-and-3 and on a punt that he absolutely should not have let get away from him. The Chiefs should not have kicked that ball away. And they gave it back to the Packers. And they got their first downs, and they got through the 2-minute warning and all of that. And the game ended with the ball in the Packers' hands, the Chiefs never having the ball back following that punt that they absolutely should not have kicked away on 4th-and-3 on their last offensive possession. There's a bot on Twitter that ranks punts by cowardice and gives them percentiles and everything. And that punt they ranked as the 98th percentile of cowardly punts of the 2019 season and the 95th percentile of all punts since 2009. They should not have kicked that ball away. And Andy Reid's answer in the postgame press conference to what happened there was some of its feel, some of its momentum, all those things that you look at. It was a phenomenal punt. We backed him up. That's really, 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 really poor logic. The second half especially. It was a great punt. We backed him up. You didn't know that was going to happen. That's something that you can say in retrospect after you've made the choice. But I'm saying before you make the choice, even if you said we had faith that it'd be a phenomenal punt. And it was a great punt, and it didn't matter. That punt could have landed literally anywhere on the field, and it would not have mattered with the way that the Packers took the ball afterwards. And then saying some of its feel and some of its momentum and all those things that you look at. The things you need to look at there are the situations in the game. You need to be aware of things like the analytics. And I don't expect him to have a robot on the sidelines giving him all of this in real time. Although, I don't know. It's the NFL. They certainly have the money for it, God knows. Maybe you get a little calculator up on a Microsoft service on the sideline. That would be great. But at the very least, you need to know Matt Moore needs to get this conversion. It's 4th-and-3. Not a lot of time left in this game at all. There's a very real chance the Packers take this ball back and then end the game with it. You need to know that on 4th-and-3, with a little over 5 minutes remaining, losing by 7 points, you need to know that that you need to get those 3 yards on this next play. And Kelce should have caught the ball on 3rd-and-3, in all likelihood. He said that after the fact. It was tough, but he should have caught it. None of that changes the fact that they should have gone for it on 4th-and-3. Later on, the Packers have the ball. The Chiefs are using their timeouts strategically. And then Andy Reid calls the timeout with 2:41 left on the clock. 2:41 on the clock is not a time to call a timeout. Because no matter what happens, either they have to snap it at, 2:01, 2:02. They have to snap it before the 2-minute warning again, because the play clock will give you 40 seconds. And they'll run another play, and the 2-minute warning won't stop the clock. Or you call a timeout at, 241. And then they will run a play, and then the clock will stop at the two-minute warning. And they still only ran one play. And you may save a couple of seconds from, you know, 2 minutes even as opposed to 156. There's no argument for calling that timeout. None. It's just a mistake. Andy Reid made a mistake. That's it. That one's that simple. And that one's really frustrating because it's a straight up and down mistake, not arguable. Unless you were to say, we thought we needed a timeout in that situation, which was not what was happening there. The latter frustrates me less than the former because I think it had less of an impact. But it was the one that was factually incorrect, which is obviously infuriating. And all of that leaves me really frustrated because I'm not inventing analytics, but I have a grand appreciation for them, and I think it makes me smarter. I think they make you smarter. I think it makes football smarter and easier to understand some of these things. While there's still a lot about football that I feel like I'm learning every week, I am not the final judge on things like that very often. And yet that frustrates me deeply. And also, if you feel like that's a reason to fire Andy Reid, or something where you feel like you can look at and say definitively, Andy Reid is never going to win a Super Bowl because of this flaw in his coaching. He made two mistakes into this Packers game. I don't know if it cost him the game, but it cost him a better shot than the one they took. They didn't take their best shot at the end of that game because of choices Andy Reid made, two of them. If you think that disqualifies Andy Reid from being a coach that can win a Super Bowl, you're a damned fool. It's just foolish. Is it now? Listen, are those mistakes in clock management and in weird run plays on second and forever? Are those mistakes Andy Reid has made this year? Are those worrisome? Hell yeah. Absolutely. Are those real concerns? Absolutely. Are those things that could get in the way of the Chiefs, some self-inflicted wounds they could be suffering in the playoffs? No question about it. But the extremes are just worthless. I remember times, distinct times, when Andy Reid was the head coach of the Chiefs, when he had Doug Peterson as the offensive coordinator, and when he had Matt Nagy as the offensive coordinator, different times where Andy Reid had a mistake. And you'd say, you know what? Just get this dude out of here. Make Nagy or Peterson the head coach. They're both younger. They're both better equipped to handle that part, I have to imagine, because who is worse? Give one of those guys the keys, and we'll be fine. Just do that. I remember that happening for both of those offensive coordinators. And right now, you would not find just about anybody with half a brain who would tell you they would throw Andy Reid to the wayside to bring in one of those two guys who were on this coaching staff quite recently. And I wouldn't do it for Eric Bieniemy because I learn from seeing things like this. Andy Reid's one of the three best coaches in football. I said on the postgame show, there's probably an argument to be made that he's one of the three best coaches in this millennium. And I don't know, you want to build it out through the entirety of offensive football? You can't tell the story of the NFL in its completion without Andy Reid. I'm not sure if there, I don't think there could possibly be an active coach right now other than Bill Belichick who that is more true for. I'd have an easier time telling the story of the NFL without Tom Coughlin, who someone brought up on the postgame show last week, or on Sunday night. I'd have an easier time telling that and be like, oh, he won two Super Bowls. No, I mean, he did. But Mike Tomlin or Bill Cowher. You've got guys who have won Super Bowls on good teams that are less important to the grand story of the NFL than Andy Reid is from an innovation standpoint. Now, is being an innovator, Is that good and qualifying enough to win a Super Bowl? No, you have to be functional and making the right decisions whenever it comes to things like clock management and timeout management and not wasting challenges early in games and not punting on 4th-and-3 whenever you're going up against Aaron Rodgers and you'd rather try to get 3 yards than to hold that offense down to a 3-and-out. or earlier in the game, back on their own 30-something. They had 4th and inches. They should have gone for that too. But if you look around the NFL and you can tell me really 2 or 3 coaches you'd rather have, Sean McVay, that one turned pretty quick. Doug Peterson's been up and down all year long. That one's turned pretty quick in Philadelphia. Matt Nagy, good God. I'm worried for Matt Nagy. I made a joke, and it was a joke. So whenever Eric Bieniemy goes and takes the Washington job, the Chiefs are going to rehire Matt Nagy as their offensive coordinator. Which, by the way, some people are like, oh God, no, don't do that. Yeah, I do that in a heartbeat. You kidding me? I don't think it'll happen. I'm not confident Bieniemy's going to get a head coaching job this year. And I'm not confident anyway that Matt Nagy's going to get fired. And I think if that did happen, it would probably just go to Mike Kafka. None of that's really important. What's important is understanding that Andy Reid is 95% the exact head coach that you want, with 5% of his DNA. And maybe it's more than that in some instances. I would say that this Packers game, it was 5%. Of his game plan, he did the wrong thing. Maybe it's 7.5%. If you want to go back and get that 4th and inches he didn't go for, whatever. You're not going to find a better ratio outside of New England whenever it comes to head coaches in the NFL. And my hope beyond hope at this point is that Andy Reid will be made better by the continued building of trust in him and Patrick Mahomes. And if Patrick Mahomes just stands on the field at 4th and 3 and yells at the sidelines, let's go, or what's the play, maybe Andy Reid will listen. Also, if he's out there, I think Andy Reid has more confidence in his offense's ability to pick up 3 yards if Patrick Mahomes is out there instead of Matt Moore. I'm not even terribly worried about this happening again. It absolutely could, and it will happen again at some point this season. You go, oh, Andy Reid made the wrong call there. And that'll happen. Because NFL head coaches are flawed and make mistakes. And the fact that Andy Reid's been having the same category of mistakes for pretty much his entire career, really frustrating. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like LeSean McCoy carrying the football like a hoagie is really frustrating. But at this point in his career, I don't really think that's going to change. Maybe Patrick Mahomes does that for Andy Reid on some level. I talked about Spagnuolo and the defense on the post-game show and the fact that they kept losing in the same way over and over with a running back going out wide and getting a linebacker to come over and cover him. Maybe I'll talk about that after I talk to Seth, and I'll bring it up with Seth because I talked about it on the post-game show some, and Seth and Nate Taylor and I talked about it on Times Ours a little bit yesterday, and so we've got a weird schedule, so I'm kind of cutting that out of the conversation here at the moment on the fly, because I do want to say a couple of things about the trade deadline that came and went today. All the stuff defensively, again, we'll talk to Seth in a minute, and you'll hear things that I'm sure I would have said, but you'll hear it in a Minnesotan accent, because I tend to side with Seth on a good number of things. But the name that came up earlier today that got a real Twitter storm going was Le'Veon Bell. Here's the thing, and this might leave me on an island. I got a lot of pushback on this on Twitter today. Like I got more of a fight in my mentions than I get on most things Chiefs related, actually. Here's where I'm at. Le'Veon Bell is a very good running back. He would be outstanding in this offense. He'd be a wonderful fit. Also, next year, he's due $13.5 million. It's pretty much all guaranteed. This year, his 2019 is cheap. Next year, though, it's a big cap number. It's a cap number that would make it really, 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 really hard to keep Chris Jones. Really, 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 really hard to add an impactful free agent this offseason. Really, really, really hard to maintain some extra flexibility, perhaps, for Patrick Mahomes' contract. You're already obviously seeing cap numbers jump for Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu, Tyreek Hill, Anthony Hitchens restructured, all of that. They're cutting Sammy Watkins. That's going to happen regardless. And then I believe still carry $7 million in dead cap space for him. Well, I also believe still carrying $8 million in dead cap space for Eric Berry. I believe they'll be carrying more dead cap space for Watkins and Berry than they would be even to pay Le'Veon Bell. So there's a lot going on there already, obviously. But the money side of things, I'm not even sure that's the right place to start. The idea that Le'Veon Bell would come in and help this offense score 65 points a game, or even improve this offense drastically, I just think is wrong. He's an excellent running back, but the Chiefs' futility at running back this year so far has been gravely over-exaggerated. The need for a top-tier running back has been widely refuted for much of the last few years of NFL football. You can look around the league and find examples of the Packers doing great things with Aaron Jones, or the Patriots doing the same thing over and over with Sony Michel, James White, and then just some dude you knew in high school. Having Kareem Hunt back on this roster would not fundamentally change anything. Le'Veon Bell would improve this offense by degrees. And it would improve, and I'd be happy to see it. But whenever you're looking at improvement by degrees, you have to assess the cost. If you give this offense healthy Patrick Mahomes, healthy Eric Fisher, hopefully healthy Andrew Wiley, if you can keep Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, and Travis Kelce where they're at right now health-wise, they need all of that, and then they need to continue putting the ball and keeping the ball in the hand of Patrick Mahomes. Now, you can say, well, Le'Veon Bell in the passing game, you do not have to tell me about how great that would be. I would be ecstatic about Le'Veon Bell in the passing game. But what is the improvement when you're looking at degrees here? Financial cost, draft pick cost. If we were even talking about this in a free agency way, this did come up at some point. It's like, oh, maybe he'll take a one-year deal. He wasn't going to. And the deal that LeSean McCoy took, I think, is justified. Much more than that to running back, I think, is largely misguided. Anyway, here's my favorite two stats. These are the two stats that I think I can kind of close my case on. And if you disagree with the line of thinking on this one, you know where I work. You know where I tweet. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe if you feel so inclined. The Chiefs are averaging 3.9 yards per carry this year. Not excellent. Not apocalyptic. Puts them 21st in the NFL. They're the 21st most efficient running offense in the NFL. The company I find even more interesting than the number there, that's tied with the Rams and the Steelers. It's 0.1 yard per carry behind the Green Bay Packers at a clean 4 yards per carry. Remember how we've heard about how that offense is, how Aaron Rodgers is thriving because his running game is so good? It's almost the exact same running game in terms of efficiency as the Chiefs' running game is. And what about the Patriots? The team, the offense that's being carried by its running game and the team that's being carried by its defense? The Chiefs average 0.7 yards per carry better than the Patriots in 2019. Again, at 21st in the NFL and 3.9 yards per carry, the Chiefs' running game is totally fine. The Chargers, by the way, 3.5 yards per carry with Austin Eckler, who people were praising, and then the return of Melvin Gordon. The Seahawks, much love for running the ball a ton, 4.1 yards per carry this season. Negligibly better than the Chiefs. The Jets are 31st in the league, by the way, 3.2 yards per carry. And it all works together, which is why I like the Green Bay comparison so much. You're improving by degrees at the least important part of your offense, because keep 3.9 yards per carry in your head, okay? 3.9 yards per carry is where the Chiefs are at right now. Jets are worse. Lots of teams are worse. Packers are at an even 4. On the other side, the Chiefs average 8.3 yards per pass attempt, even when we're talking about an injured Pat Mahomes and then an absent Pat Mahomes. 8.3 yards per pass attempt. Why would you want to take the ball out of the hands of Patrick Mahomes to run it more often, even if you thought that Le'Veon Bell would add a full yard to your running efficiency. You shouldn't. And the Chiefs are third in the league, by the way, in passing efficiency. The thing, going by yards per attempt, the thing for me that I would love, again, is to see Le'Veon Bell running these screens and everything in Andy Reid's offense. But the degrees at which it would be improved over LeSean McCoy and Damian Williams and Darrell Williams, and maybe by the end of the season, Darwin Thompson running them, I just don't think is going to be worth the acquisition cost. The salary cost next year, the draft pick cost that they obviously chose not to pay whatever it was before the trade deadline this year, I think the Chiefs absolutely made the right move by not putting up another mortgage to go bring in Le'Veon Bell. I just think that would have been a mistake, and it would have cost them an opportunity to keep Chris Jones. It would have cost them cap flexibility the next year. It would have cost them draft picks that they're already pretty limited on. And I say all of this as someone who, you know, if you listen to me regularly, you know I am not married to draft picks and cap space. Those are worth more as ideas than as actual functional things. And even I look at the cost it would have likely taken to get Le'Veon Bell and what it would have actually cost to pay him next year as something that just simply wasn't worth it. So we'll talk about that, I am sure. We'll talk about what we saw in Chiefs versus Packers with Seth Kizer of The Athletic next year on Sports Radio 810. It's Tuesday, and it doesn't matter what time it is, because on Tuesdays, we talk to Seth Kizer. Gosh dang it, pardon my language, Seth. You can follow him on Twitter, at RealMNChiefsFan. You can read everything that he writes up on The Athletic, and you can listen to Times Ours, a podcast with me and Seth and Nate Taylor on The Athletic. Mondays are free for everybody. Yesterday's episode is up and out there. You can go listen to it right now. Fridays is just for Athletic subscribers, but you should be doing that already anyway, because that's how all the articles go up. So come over to The Athletic and get everything you can from Seth. Seth, we are now on the other side of the trade deadline, and the Chiefs traded for Slay Peterson. I heard they were making a run there for a little bit, looking at any of the number of safeties they could have added, just basically replacing Dan Sorensen with the future first-round pick. Le'Veon Bell is a Chief now. And finally, I feel like maybe the Chiefs are a good football team.
Well, what's just crazy is the fact that they managed to somehow trade for Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady.
It was,
and these three quarterback formations, I think, are the new wave of the future. It's a shame that they weren't able to obtain, you know, Aaron Donald for a fifth round pick. But look, people are disappointed, and I get it, because sure, you know, there were some ideas, but people should probably relax a little bit. What's really funny to me is heading into the Packers game, by and large, what I saw from people, at least on social media, which again, you know, you and I talked about this on Times Ours, which is dispositive. Yes. The way people act on Twitter is definitely representative of real life.
100%.
So, yeah.
I've had one person in real life ever call me an idiot to my face. And it happens four times a day on Twitter.
Well, you're young. I have had people call me an idiot to my face.
That's fair.
Although I have met people who called me an idiot on Twitter and they were super nice to my face.
Really weird.
And then like 6 months later, the same person was saying things about me on Twitter, and I just said to them, I can't figure you out. You were super nice when I met you in person, but now you're saying things about me again. And then he accused me of wanting to fight him. It was very weird.
Twitter's very
strange. Yeah, Twitter's weird. This is why it's so representative of real life. Anyway, before the Packers game, everyone's like, you know what, man, no Mahomes, no Jones, no Clark, no Fisher, no Wiley, no Fuller. They are missing literally six starters. And of those six starters, it's like four of their seven most important players,
yeah,
including two of their most important. I would say Mahomes and Jones are the two most important players. And so everyone's like, oh, yeah, we don't have it. You know, it's Green Bay's coming to town. What were they, 6-1?
Yeah.
Really good defense. Yeah. They have Aaron freaking Rodgers at quarterback.
Heard of him.
They're missing Davante Adams, but they're by and large healthy. And everyone's like, you know what? If the Chiefs can even just make this remotely competitive, I'm going to be pretty encouraged.
Yep.
Then they make it pretty competitive,
yep,
and lose. They make it very competitive and lose. And since then, everyone's freaking out. And I can't figure out when people lost perspective. I feel like the Chiefs controlled enough of the game to where people got their hopes up and anticipated a win. And so then when they lost, people lost all that perspective that they'd had before the game. And so I think maybe that's why everyone's just screaming they need to make a trade. And the reality is the Chiefs are a good team. They've been a good team. And you and I were chatting before we started. They're the team without Mahomes for a game and a half, without Watkins for multiple games, without Hill for multiple games, without Fisher for multiple games, they are still, and without Damian Williams for multiple games, they are second in the league in offensive efficiency, mm-hmm. according to Football Outsiders. Mm-hmm. So, again, and that's with Mahomes missing a game and a half and being hobbled for another three games. Without Hill, bunch of games. Without Watkins, bunch of games. All this stuff. On defense, without Chris Jones multiple weeks, without Kendall Fuller a couple weeks, without Frank Clark this last week, without Anthony Hitchens a couple of weeks, which, yes, that does matter. He does have a skill set that does help. We saw that when he came back. Yes. They're now 17th in the league in defensive efficiency, which is way better than they were last year, by the way.
Everyone this offseason said, if they can be middle of the road, that's middle of the road, almost exactly.
That is the exact conversation I was thinking of. Us, if they can just be middle of the road. Yeah. Guess what? They're middle of the road defensively, and they're still great on offense, even though they've... And that's after a game and a half with no Mahomes, three yes. games where he's completely hobbled, games without Hill, games without Watkins, multiple games without those guys, and Fisher. And people are freaking out like they're some kind of terrible team. And I just, look, I will tell this to everyone who's freaking out. Yes, if for the rest of the year Patrick Mahomes is either out or completely hobbled, and Tyreek Hill misses like half the time, and Sammy Watkins misses like half the time, and Eric Fisher is out, and Chris Jones is out, and Frank Clark is out, and Anthony Hitchens misses like half the time, and Kendall Fulton misses like half the time, yes, the Chiefs are not going to be that good. This is true. So maybe that makes people feel better. I don't know. But the reality is, they're just not healthy.
Here's the thing there. So with all of the... I want to be the devil's advocate for a sec. I want to tell you... I'll say the thing to you that I've seen show
Shocker.
Up.
Shocker.
I want to... Well, I listen, I've been aligned with what you've been saying. But the thing that I've seen show up that I would give at least a little bit of attention to, is you say they're a good team. They've been hurt, and this is a good football team. Is this team able to win a Super Bowl with those things? Or frankly, even the next level, should they have made a move to increase the chances that they win a Super Bowl with what they currently have this season? And I think I know where your answer is. I know what mine is, but I want you to say it out loud.
Sure. I would have loved to see them make a move that increases their chances at winning a Super Bowl. Trading for Janoris Jenkins, I'm not sure does that. Mm. With how Jenkins has played the last couple of years, I don't know if Janoris Jenkins is an upgrade over Bashaud Breeland mm-hmm. or Mo Claiborne. You know what? Claiborne's been pretty good.
And it's definitely not an upgrade over our shared custody son, Charvarius Ward.
Yeah, and you know what? Ward's been pretty good lately, too.
He's had moments, man. Charvarius Ward has popped off the damn tape. Ah!
Well, there's not as much pressure now. And, you know, I mean, Kendall Fuller's been pretty good. Rashad Fenton has been pushed into action. You know what? He's been pretty good.
Yes, he has.
And so here's the thing. Everyone's like, oh, they need a corner. I agree, and you and I have talked about this. If you're talking about Jalen Ramsey, yep. if you're talking about Patrick Peterson, yep. if you were talking about a number one corner, yes, that would have been great, and I think they should have been very aggressive about that. However, they couldn't get Jalen Ramsey. The Rams gave up two first-rounders for him, meaning the Chiefs would have had to give up two first-rounders and probably like another second-rounder or something
yep.
like that.
Yep.
Because their picks are likely to be worse than the Rams. Okay?
Yep.
And so that just wasn't on the table. Plus, it came out that Jacksonville didn't want to, multiple people reported now, Jacksonville wasn't going to deal him to Kansas City.
Yep.
Because they view them as a competitor.
Which was really, really dumb and strange. But yeah,
the Broncos were never going to trade them Chris Harris.
Right, correct.
Right?
Yep.
The Lions wanted a Ramsey-like bounty for Darius Slay.
Yep.
And now, that's one that I would have at least thought about. I would have thought about long and hard. That might be the one. But when you think about the fact that they haven't picked a guy in the first round in a couple years, when you think about Jones' situation, that's a lot to think about when Darius Slay has, you know, he's fought some injuries this year. It's just there's a little bit more to the story there. And so, yes, you want to make a trade that'll improve your chances of winning the Super Bowl. And people are talking as though they were just so obvious and out there. Well, for who? Like, who are these players? Tell me who this. Well, we need a 3-down linebacker. If you show me a great 3-down linebacker who's on the market, absolutely. But I'm telling you, Carolina's not trading Luke Kuechly. Mm-hmm. The Hawks aren't looking to trade Bobby Wagner. The Falcons aren't trading Deion Jones.
Yep.
They did. These guys just aren't available. So yes, I would have loved to see them make a move that improved their chances of the Super Bowl. But I didn't hear any rumors of guys that would have legitimately done that, other than maybe Adams from the Jets, because he's potentially a guy you could have act as a de facto linebacker.
And even then, but like you are trading for a guy to play a role that's not necessarily his best role. Like not, I don't want to say that he and Tyrann Mathieu would have been redundant, but they would have been.
Correct.
You know, similarly used.
Yeah, it would have been weird. And you could have brought him in and said, hey, you know, on early downs, we're going to do this triune safety thing and let Matthew play slot, maybe. And then, you know, later downs, you're going to be like a linebacker to where you can either cover running backs or blitz or whatever. You know, that's that could maybe happen, but it's still not ideal, right? You're still kind of pressing.
Yep.
And so for me, I think at this trade deadline, yes, you want to improve your chances of winning the Super Bowl, but there was no one, I'll phrase it this way. If the Chiefs get everyone back and get everyone healthy, and even not everyone, but even say like 80% of the gang that's been out, especially including Mahomes, Jones, Clark, and Fisher, right? Those guys get healthy. They are a Super Bowl contending team, a strong Super Bowl contending team. And I didn't see anyone on the market that's really going to move the needle that much for that team. You did just the right type of player wasn't available, at least not that I'm aware of.
So here's the thing. I'm cutting you off because someone in their car right now driving around is screaming to cut you off here, so I'm going to because I can hear you yelling in your car. You were not waiting on the line as I was giving my first segment of thoughts. You were probably seeing some of my tweets from earlier today as Le'Veon Bell was bantied about. I would like for you to say, because honestly, there have been times in the whole run defense thing, there have been times in the running backs don't matter discussion where I feel like you're towing that line of being the extremist that is the future that analytics nerds want. And I feel like I am probably going to out-extreme you on my particular apathy with the idea of trading for Le'Veon Bell. But even if you have to pull me back to the middle a little bit here, I would just like for you to talk about the possibility of trading for Le'Veon Bell for a second.
The problem with Le'Veon Bell was not his money this year, but his money next year and the year after. And a lot of it was guaranteed. And that's a real problem. As things currently stand to make things work next year, the Chiefs aren't going to be able to keep Watkins around. And it was always going to be that way.
Yes.
Right? It was always either going to be an extension of some sort or a trade or a cut. That was just always going to be that way when you look at a $21 million number in that third year with $14 million of it being cap space you can clear. So that move is happening regardless, because that's what I heard people say. It's like, oh, well, if you get rid of Watkins, you have room for Bell. No, they need to make that room regardless.
Yes.
So the Bell thing, it's just not – it could happen, and I would have been excited for this year because he's a great fit for Andy Reid's offense. He would have definitely been a big upgrade over everyone they've got. Excellent receiver, excellent runner, would have looked great, would have raised the ceiling of the offense to an extent. But the problem the Chiefs have had, regardless, I mean, people can scream till they're blue in the face that the problem is that they can't run the ball. But no one who has said that to me has been able to provide me with compelling evidence that that's actually the case, whether you talk about the numbers, game script, or film. No one's been able to show me that persuasively other than yelling things or talking about one or two individual plays rather than the entirety. And so, you know, the whole thing is, yeah, I tell clients that are having trouble accepting reality, reality doesn't care if you believe it.
Right.
It just doesn't. You know, it just is what it is.
Right.
And so Bell would have moved the needle to an extent, but he he would not have absolutely changed things in the way I think an impact defensive player would. And so I get it to an extent, but it's not something that it is worth the squeeze there when you're talking about giving up valuable draft picks for a position that isn't all that important, one that already produces in Reed's offense and would have cost you a lot of money. That just doesn't add up.
The one stat that I read earlier that I might read it every segment tonight just so I make sure everyone catches it, is that the Chiefs this season on the ground are averaging 3.9 yards per carry. That's not great, mm-hmm. but it's not horrendous, and it's not even particularly near the very bottom of the league. It's 21st in the NFL, in fact. But that is tied with the Rams and the Steelers. It is 0.1 yard per carry behind the Packers and 0.7 yards per carry better than the Patriots. Like, this isn't
right.
They don't run the ball very often. And this is a big number that's pulled down from every other individual thing. You can go to situations and all of that. But they would run the ball more with Le'Veon Bell, I'm sure, but whenever you're getting 8.3 yards per pass attempt, counting all those Matt Moore pass attempts, I don't know why you would mm-hmm. want to run it more often, because Le'Veon Bell's not coming in for 8 yards a carry.
Absolutely. And that's where, you know, in individual situations it might help to an extent, but it doesn't move the needle nearly enough to be worth really big draft capital, which I think you'd have to give up mm-hmm. in order to get Bell. I think they would have asked for, like, because, you know, Adam Gase is crazy. I mean, I think they would have asked for something like a first rounder.
Yeah.
And that's, there's no running back in the league worth a first rounder. Yeah. If the Giants had called and offered Saquon, I'd have said no.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would get mad over that. But Andy Reid's running backs already produce at a high level.
Yes.
So it just doesn't move the needle enough. And that's my big thing is, when you look at this roster, when healthy, even mostly healthy, including the obviously key guys, this is good enough to win the Super Bowl without needing to sell the farm to make a marginal upgrade. You don't need that marginal upgrade. You're already that good. And then here's the flip side of things. When people are like, yeah, but they haven't been good enough lately. Look, here's the deal. If Mahomes continues to be hurt, or, you know, Jones stays out and Clark misses more time and Fisher can't get healthy, there's no trade they were going to make that was going to make them contenders.
Right.
If these right. guys are still hurt. If the situation that has been the last 4 weeks of Chiefs football continues, they are not going to win the Super Bowl. You're not going to win a Super Bowl with a hobbled Mahomes. Mm-hmm. You're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. The teams you face in the playoffs will be too good. Mm-hmm. Right? You're not going to win the Super Bowl missing. And the hobbled Mahomes is the biggest thing, right?
Yes.
Because they could win a Super Bowl even if everyone else missed. But if you're missing Fisher and Clark and Jones and, you know, Hill and Watkins are popping in and out, you're probably not going to win the Super Bowl that way either.
Yep.
And there's no trade they were going to make that was going to alter that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So
yes,
that's where 100%. It just, there was no obvious fit. And I think people need to accept that. And sometimes I think people just want to see a move for the sake of a move. And that is how you get worse in the NFL, not better.
We will talk about what we learned a little bit from Sunday night against the Packers. But first, have you heard the new ABC song?
The new ABC song?
Uh-huh, the alphabet song. Yeah, I guess you'd call it either way.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, I'm familiar.
The alphabet?
No.
I'd like to play it for you and everyone. I'd like to play this before you and the audience and God. And I'd just like to get some, just kind of a, you know, live reaction and some general thoughts here. Here is the new ABC song.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z.
Yeah, Seth, your thoughts.
What is this abomination that is filling my ears? Like, I feel like I need an old priest, a young priest, and some holy water.
If I say right now you cannot say the word LMNOP, could you follow the letters that come after that off the top of your head? I was doing this driving today, and I kept screwing it up.
Like the letter that comes after P?
Can you just say the alphabet, but you cannot skip okay. through LMNOP as one word?
Well, you want to hear a fun story with regards to the alphabet.
Can you do it backwards? Are you one of those nightmare people?
Well, I can do it backwards. Ugh. I am one of those nightmare people. But so when I was a prosecutor, quite often officers, when they're doing the roadside sobriety test,
yes,
they'll ask people to everyone always says the ABCs, well, they make them recite it backwards. That's not often what they do because that's hard.
Yeah.
What they'll do is they'll make them say the ABCs while they're walking or something like that, right?
Okay, I could do that, sure.
And,
can I sing it?
Yeah,
hold on. Seth, dead serious question to you, professional lawyer, Seth Kaiser. Switch hats here. Put on your lawyer hat, which I imagine you have a literal one of. Could I sing the ABCs while walking and pass a sobriety test?
Like, sober? I think you'd manage it.
Yeah,
you talk for a living.
I am not. No, I'm not. I'm saying, like, would that be allowed? Because that's what I would think I would need to do. Not drunk in this situation, for the record.
Yeah. Well, you'd need to maybe walk a line while you do it, or doing the eye test, or, you know, finger to nose, that kind of stuff. They have a lot of tests because they understand some people might have a little bit of a disability or whatever.
Sure.
So they give people a fair shot. But so the funniest thing, officers constantly, because I had to watch a lot of roadside sobriety test squad vids, right?
Mm-hmm.
When people were challenging the stop or things like that. And constantly officers have to tell people, recite the ABCs, please don't sing it. They always had to tell people, don't sing the ABCs. And you would not believe the number of people, usually pretty hammered, that just, like, you know, they just, B,
yes.
And they could not do it because it was just too hard without singing it. So I can understand that, but they've ruined it. That is that is terrible. That was like L, M, and I'm like, wait. Or no, it just went L, and then it stopped, right?
I think it's L, M, N, O, P. See, I can't. I know it's horrible. And that what you just described is what I was asking, is would I be allowed to sing it? Because I do believe the number of people would have a problem with that, because I, stone cold sober, right now, if you said, say the ABCs, get them all right, or we're going to, you know, throw you off the balcony here at 8:10, I would be, like, holding on to the door so you wouldn't be able to push me outside, because I would get really nervous around my favorite word, elemental P, because that is one word now.
Yeah, that's I got to tell you, you're not alone in that. It is constantly, you'll see that on videos. You know, I mean, you'll even see it in reports sometimes. You know, I instructed Mr. Smith to not sing the ABC. You know, and it's always the things you read in police reports occasionally,
because
some officers, especially younger ones that haven't been on the job a while, they don't know what to include and what not to include.
Sure.
So it's like, dude, I don't need to know that you told them not to sing it. Like, you don't need to include that. But it just always made me laugh every time. Or when you're watching the squad vid, you know, in front of a jury in a super serious room, and the person, I can't do it without singing.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yep, that would be me. That would be me. And again, theoretically here, not drunk driving, and that would still be me. I would just ask for a breathalyzer. Wait, no, listen, can I just do that, please? Because if you make me say the ABCs, you're going to think that I'm drunk and I'm going to understand.
Yes, I used to commute from Minneapolis to my hometown on Friday evenings when I was in law school, because I lived in the cities during the week and then I'd drive back. Yeah, we call Minneapolis St. Paul the cities, by the way.
The cities, yeah.
So, because they're the big town.
They're the twin cities.
Anyway,
they're
the twin cities.
Yeah. Do you ever call them the TC? The TCs?
We don't.
That's
no.
Too bad.
So
you know that's what the Minnesota Twins hat's for, right? It took me a long time before I learned. Why do the Minnesota Twins wear a hat that says TC on it? Twin cities.
Yes.
Learned that relatively late in life. So if you would not bully me about it, that'd be great.
That's because no one sang it to you as a child. So you weren't able to remember it. But I would get pulled over quite a bit because I'd be on the road at, like, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning.
Relatable.
And, you know, word of the wise, if you're on the road at 1 in the morning, they're probably going to pull you over more likely than not.
Because,
you know, a lot of y'all are drunk. I don't know what to tell you.
Yep.
Statistically speaking, we could talk about that. So I would always just immediately say, hey, you know, I go to law school down in the cities. I'm driving back. I understand it's late. I understand what you're doing. I'm willing to just take a breathalyzer. Can we just do that so I don't have to stand outside the car for 20 minutes?
I've been pulled over a lot in my young life. I got pulled over twice in the same night at one point, like on the same drive home. I had a headlight out, and the second time, I regret this in retrospect, but I got pulled over. Officer was like, "Hey, do you have your light?" I said, "No, I didn't. I'm sorry. I'll get taken care of." Like, all right, fine. Move along after the license registration thing. And then I swear, 10 minutes later, slightly closer to home, I get pulled over again. And the officer comes to the window, and like I rolled down my window, and they get there and like shine the flashlight in. And I swear, and again, this could have gone worse for me probably, but I swear, I looked at the officer and I went, "Headlight?" And she was like, "Yeah, you know, I got pulled over 10 minutes ago. I'm sorry." And I just like, I had my license registration, like still like sitting on the passenger seat. So like, I was like dangling it out the window, just like, "Yeah, come and get it. My headlight's out. I'm going to get it. I'll take care of it tomorrow."
What you should have done was pulled over and then immediately gotten out of your vehicle and started walking towards their squad, Josh.
Yeah, they love that, don't they?
That way you could have explained to them what was going on. Maybe yelling and waving the things that, okay, look,
yeah,
this probably isn't
them.
Funny to some people.
No,
this
it's
is not,
not
actual advice.
Don't
get out of your car when you get pulled over. Put your hands on your steering wheel. Don't fiddle in your glove compartment. Don't get your license out in advance. Put your hands on the steering wheel and wait.
Yep. Yeah, I've been pretty good at that, except for that one time, because I was really pissed that I'd been pulled over twice in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's like,
my attitude wasn't ideal, but it's...
It would have been a great story if just, like, you know, it was some officer just having a crap night.
Yep.
And she comes up to your car, and then you got this snarky 20-year-old, "Headlight? Get out of the car, sir!"
That's why. Right, no, that...
You get maced.
Yeah, no, that, listen, the reason that I was so willing to maybe get tased for Patrick Mahomes playing against the Packers is because I wasn't tased in that moment, and so I haven't had that experience yet.
Right.
Listen, okay, so we've got a whole episode of Times Ours that people can go back and listen to and should listen to. Again, it's public to everybody right now. Just search for Times Ours, which T-I-M-E-S space, new word, O-U-R-S. We've had people talk about, use the hashtag Time Sours. We've had people ask about the show Time Czars, like the Russian, like, I don't know, is a czar be like a...
The czar was royalty? That was the Russian.
Would that be Russian royalty? Is that a Russian? It's not an elected office, I don't think. Regardless,
no, they did not elect their czars.
No, I didn't think so. But you know, I'm busy thinking about my headlights at the moment. So you can search for Time Czars and hear me, Nate, and Seth talking about the game in the show that we did yesterday morning. Of all of that, like, maybe you want to pick a thing. The day of Andy Reid is probably the thing that has led most of these conversations, not happening on trade deadline day. If you could just give this audience a little taste of where you were at in that regard, then go get the full meal on Times Ours.
Sure. So the deal with Sunday's game is you kind of got the best and the worst of Andy Reid.
And you can read how they talk about this on The Athletic.
I did. I wrote an article about this, you know, the it was the best of Reed, it was the worst of Reed, you know, whatever you want to do there. I don't think I opened that way, but
you did,
it's clearly a missed opportunity.
Yeah, you really did.
So the thing with Andy Reed is he's such an exceptional offensive-minded coach. He's such a good teacher of his scheme. He gets players to play hard for him. He does a ton of things really well as a head coach. In-game clock management is not one of them, although he's been better in recent years. Like, he hasn't made me as crazy lately, except against Green Bay, both at the end of the half and at the end of the game. He did a couple things that made me crazy with his use of timeouts and when to run the ball, when not to run. You know, that was rough. And then just he's so conservative with fourth downs. And, you know, the one with 5 minutes left, I've had a ton of people just, "Oh, well, you know, if they didn't get it, then, you know, a first down later in the game's over for the, you know, for the Packers."
Yeah.
What I've pointed out to people is, you know, if the Packers end up getting that first down and then kicking a field goal, you've still kind of gotten the stop. And yes, you're down two scores, but you've got the ball back and you've got a chance in terms of scoring in an onside kick.
Yeah.
You've at least got a chance there.
Yeah.
Whereas you give them an entire field to work with, now they can just bleed you dry. And that's exactly what they did. And then the second thing I would ask people is, what's more likely, the Chiefs gain 3 yards, even with Matt Moore, or the Chiefs hold Aaron Rodgers to a 3-and-out? What's more likely there? Because a first down is almost deadly, no matter where they're at on the field.
Yep.
But in a way, it's more deadly when they're all the way on the other end because they've got all this yardage to chew up. Whereas they're going to call it differently if they're closer to their own end zone. They're going to kick that field goal and be a little more conservative. And you at least have, you know, a long shot, but a shot. Whereas what they did, they created it to where there was really only one scenario where they really had a shot.
Yep.
So that was maybe more than an hors d'oeuvre there. But it's just... Reed is the, and then before anyone thinks I'm saying, oh, yeah, yeah, they need to get a new coach. That's ridiculous. Andy Reid's coaching ability is the only reason they were in that game.
Yes, 100%.
He out-coached LaFleur the vast majority of the night.
Yep.
And that kept them in the game against Rodgers and an excellent defense. However, with Reed, you're going to have to live with those other things.
The one other thing that I've been trying to lay out here recently that I really enjoyed your take on, because it sounded a lot like the take that I had on the postgame show, so I guess that's me being relatively see-through. But whenever you look at the thing that cost the Chiefs defensively over and over in this game, it was the Packers getting a linebacker outside or getting a running back outside and the Chiefs sending a linebacker over there. Now, I'm Twitter Josh, and I think that's happening because Steve Spagnuolo is an idiot who never saw that problem, and if a good coach would have seen it and solved it. Tell me I'm right, Seth.
I could, but I'd be lying to you.
That's fine.
So, there's only so many options as a defensive coordinator. The Chiefs, especially missing Jones and Clark, people have been loving this new aggressive defense, right? Get them blitzes going, you know, get crazy. Well, if you're going to blitz, especially if they have got a team spread out, like playing like four or five wide, like the Packers did and motioning their running back out, then you have to play man across the board.
Yep.
You can't blitz a ton of guys against four or five wide and play zone coverage. There's just too much field,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't blitz six guys or, you know, and then ask the remaining five to cover the entire field with zone. You can. It's just not going to work out super well
right.
against five wide.
Right.
You have to play man coverage. And so then what they can do is motion out the running back, and NFL defenses, and I've talked about this before the season with you, this is what I want the Chiefs to do.
Yes.
Because NFL defenses, they march out a linebacker.
Yes.
Constantly.
Yes.
I don't know why they're not running out Damian Williams or Darwin Thompson to the boundary every snap.
Yeah. Seriously. I mean, I kind of imagine
it's
Andy
an easy win.
I imagine Andy Reid, maybe he saw that in person, beat them for a little bit. And I imagine we're going to see him do a little bit of that against the Vikings. Just a moment or two. Oh, that's, yeah, yes, I recognize this from whenever it kicked their teeth in 10 days ago or 7 days ago, I guess.
Right. And so maybe we'll see more of that. Andy Reid does love to use things that have been successful against him. But, you know, the reality is the side note here is also they want the Chiefs. People want the Chiefs to be strong against the run, too, which means
yep.
it's tough to take Hitchens off the
yep.
field or Wilson off the field
yep.
and put, you know, Armani Watts or Jordan Lucas out there
yep.
because you still want to be strong against the run. You can't do all three of those things at once. You can, but you need a very specific personnel. And
yeah.
so that's where the biggest problem comes in there is the Chiefs don't have a Deion Jones that can do everything. And so one adjustment I would like them to make, because you can't just trot out safeties, I don't think. Although I do like Armani Watts.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's a potential solution on these passing downs. But I do think that one thing they ought to do is what they did last year, start giving Dorian O'Daniel some snaps and basically saying you've got one of two jobs here. If the running back comes out of the backfield, you are in man coverage on him.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't, you are blitzing. Because he can't be trusted in zone coverage. You know, people are saying,
right.
oh, replace Neiman with O'Daniel. Neiman understands zone concepts.
Yeah.
And O'Daniel hasn't shown that he does.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just do an even swap there. But you can give O'Daniel a limited role. And he's more than fast enough to cover the vast majority of running backs. So I'm hoping they'll adjust a little bit. Otherwise, you're going to see that stuff again, probably against the Patriots.
Very, very last thing on the way out. Just tell me what you're working on right now. What are you looking at from the game specifically for your film review going up on The Athletic?
Everything we just talked about, actually.
Woo-hoo!
I'm going to talk about the problem with the linebackers and one way to solve it. I'm also going to take a look again at Colin Saunders. I'm going to take a look at Matt Moore. Just the general film review takeaways from Green Bay.
All right, so that'll be up on The Athletic sometime very soon, I imagine. Tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow at some point.
So some point tomorrow that'll be up on The Athletic. It's theathletic.com, where you can also get great content like articles by Nate Taylor and then a podcast that has Seth and Nate and also me. Times are is up in The Athletic every Monday and Friday. Thank you, Seth. I'm sorry for making you listen to the alphabet song.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Just a little Chiefs talk left for you tonight here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe, and if you missed any of the show tonight, either our conversation with our friend Seth Kaiser from The Athletic or the opening segment where I just said lots of very smart things, you can just take my word for it. You won't have to go listen to that. But if you want to go back and listen to Seth, you can just go to 810WHB.com or the 810 mobile app. You should have it there because all of the podcasts from all of the shows show up there in the mobile app. And if you missed any of the show, you can grab it both in the additional programming section, because it's technically additional programming, or on the Almost Entirely Sports feed. You can just search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts, because this is basically Almost Entirely Sports. We'll be getting back into the slightly more regular football season schedule of Almost Entirely Sports very soon. So if you're subscribed there, you'll get that show as soon as we get back to our, again, sort of regularly scheduled NFL season schedule. Dancing around baseball and the NFL these last few weeks is pushed us back to a little bit later in the night, but I hope you've been here for it and appreciate you for being here for that as well. We covered a lot of this with Seth and at the very, very end there, talking about the Chiefs defense and Steve Spagnuolo. It's the one thing I didn't really get to in the first segment that I do want to talk about a little here. Whenever you are in a place with less than ideal personnel, you are going to always be forced to select something you're going to do less well than the other thing. It's just the give and take of the sport. And whenever you're going up against Aaron Rodgers, there's a really, really good chance that he will identify the best way to beat you, the best way to expose the thing that you are least good at in that situation. And that's just kind of how it goes. Because he's Aaron Rodgers, and you're working with a really injured and somewhat shallow group of defensive players. Shallow, certainly, by injury, but also, this is the first year of trying to give Steve Spagnuolo the guys that he wants for this defense. And I told you, I will remind you of the thing that I said as the Chiefs were hiring Steve Spagnuolo, even as it doesn't seem great right now. I said that hiring Spagnuolo, one of the biggest things for him was going to be his ability to use the guys that are already here. And they moved on from a lot of players, and they brought in a lot of players. And some of the guys that are holdovers don't seem like the right fit in lots of these situations. And that's a real problem that the Chiefs have and that they're going to have to figure out how to overcome in some way. But whenever you look at the fact that basically the Chiefs defense lost whenever Ben Neiman or Anthony Hitchens was in coverage one-on-one with a running back out by the sidelines, you can see why that cost them. And I think I'm almost impressed by the fact that that was sort of the only thing that was working all night for the Packers. This does, you know, lend itself to the conversation that Seth was getting towards. Could Dorian O'Daniel either blitz or cover the running back at all times? Maybe. Could Armani wants to that? Maybe. I don't think that there's a solution to that on the roster. And so you have to say, okay, well, can Spags fix that in some way? Maybe. Maybe. I just think that if you do that, if you pull Anthony Hitchens off the field and you put Dan Sorensen out there, you're worse against the run now. If you try to cover zone there, like Seth was saying, if you try to cover with zone, now you've lost your ability to really blitz as aggressively as the Chiefs have been doing to wonderful success, by the way. You are always going to have to scheme up some decisions, and I felt like the Chiefs pretty clearly made a decision on Sunday night and say, all right, beat us that way if you can. Or if you need to, hopefully Aaron Rodgers won't notice it right away. And frankly, like, I felt like they managed well enough for long enough that they obviously gave their offense a chance there towards the end. And LeSean McCoy fumbling the ball, and then a couple of decisions made poorly in my mind by Andy Reid. limited the Chiefs' opportunities. Didn't straight up and down cost them the game, but it limited their opportunities whenever they needed as many opportunities as they could get as a big underdog in this game. Frankly, I would say a bigger underdog in my mind than they were in Vegas. But you need to get as many opportunities as you can in those situations, and then you need to make the most of them. And the Chiefs didn't. I kind of think that the game is relatively simple in that regard, or at least that's how I would sum it up after telling you all show how complicated it all is. The individual choices and performances are really complicated. I think if you wanted to wrap it all up to say the Chiefs didn't get all of the opportunities they should have had, at least once or twice, I would say Andy Reid made the wrong call on fourth down, and then LeSean McCoy gave the ball right back to the Packers. Those cost them possessions, and you can't do that whenever you have Matt Moore and they have Aaron Rodgers, even as Matt Moore played pretty well in this game. So I don't have a lot of venom from that performance, from the players, from the coaching staff, whatever. And I'm actually left relatively encouraged, as I have been most of the games this year, by Steve Spagnuolo, because he's shown me things that I didn't necessarily expect to see. Even the Hail Mary at the end of the first half. And I know that this is a little bit of a low bar that I'm asking him to clear, but that, like, super heavy blitz for that Hail Mary at the end of the first half. There was no Hail Mary attempt because the Chiefs didn't do the conventional thing of putting your freaking tight end on the goal line and just saying, all right, jump ball, and we'll pray to God that Aaron Rodgers doesn't make this work again, because he's the best in football at doing that. Hopefully this won't come back and bite us. Hopefully we'll just do it like everyone else does it. Steve Spagnuolo went, no. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to blitz. We're not going to play the numbers game on the back end. That ball's not going to get out of his hand. Or if it does, he's going to have to throw it way short to a receiver who is not looking for the ball. It's a Hail Mary. There's not a hot route. None of those receivers are looking over their shoulder 15 yards downfield to see if Aaron Rodgers got blitzed. Now, I will say, in the future, they might. Like, if you need to throw a Hail Mary against the Chiefs' defense later this year, you probably will have a guy that's maybe paying a little more attention. But even then, you know, if you run three sort of Hail Mary routes and then you have a slant on the other side or something that is looking back to the ball pretty much immediately in case the Chiefs blitz again, then that basically becomes maybe like the Hail Mary play the Chiefs ran, where, you know, they've got blockers and the numbers might be even, but then that Chiefs defense, those three or four defensive backs, they just have to tackle that guy. Like, and maybe that's the option in the future, but that wasn't what the Packers were going to do then. They certainly weren't expecting the blitz. So just seeing Steve Spagnuolo just do the smart thing, seeing the Chiefs defensive coordinator just do the smart, unconventional thing in that moment is really encouraging to me. I've been continually impressed by Spagnuolo, and I can even admit to maybe even being biased by being in the press conferences and listening to the way that he answers the questions, being able to ask some questions and get real answers back. He's not just spitting back cliches and running away from questions. Like, I feel like I've gained a little bit of insight through Steve Spagnuolo, and the way that he'll just, again, like, answer questions that are relatively chill, like, aren't going to try to tear down the Chiefs' defensive mindset and share it with the enemy. Just questions like, hey, I don't really understand what happened here. Can you explain that back? And he does, in a way that makes me believe that he really does know what he's doing there. And, again, maybe it's a low bar to clear, but it feels like it's been a while where we've looked at the Chiefs sideline with the defenses out there and kind of wondered if the dude with the headset was guessing. And I feel like Steve Spagnuolo has a plan. If this defense can perform at the level that it's been performing at and then also be getting healthier so he has more options, which, like, by the way, you don't have to blitz as much in theory whenever Frank Clark and Chris Jones are healthy and out there, so it allows you to do more things in coverage. Like, I just think that the more toys Steve Spagnuolo has to play with on this defense, the more unique it's going to be on a game-to-game basis. And I'm excited for that. So it was one thing that kept costing the Chiefs defensively on Sunday night, and that was frustrating. But I'm hardly concerned about it. Frustrated, sure, in a one-game sample size. But long-term worried, I'm simply not. That's all we got for you here tonight on Sports Radio 810. Thank you for listening. Also, thanks to Josh Byers for hitting all the buttons this evening and keeping us on the air. We'll talk to you again throughout the course of this week, and really for just anything, for me talking about oftentimes the Chiefs, oftentimes nonsense. Just subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye, Mom.